I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Contestants will have to fight for their lives in an epic battle of life and death. I'm so excited!
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 38 for the week of July 28th, 2014. I am Moldbreaker David T. Cole, and I'm here with Spirit Gum Sarah D. Bunting.
Stick with me, kid.
Glenn Hetrick stylist Tara Ariano.
Yeah, that looks great.
And last minute paint job Monty Ashley.
It's okay, I'm pretty sure I can save this.
Welcome back. Thank you to everyone for your patience while we took a couple of weeks off to have some family time in Canada. That was just me and Dave. But now we are back with Monty Ashley, first-time guest. And the reason that we have Monty on is not just because he is great, but because he will be covering Face Off for us all season on Previously.tv. And that is what we are discussing today. But before we get into it, Monty, I believe I just read on social media that you are injured in your arm. Please explain.
Yes. Well, I was riding my Vespa and not looking where I was going as closely as I should have. And long story short, the Vicodin has kicked in and I feel great.
Okay, great.
Hooray.
Good news.
And I'm smoking crack.
Woo.
So it's going to be a good one.
Before we get into our discussion, let's play a little bit of some commentary on the episode that I recorded while I was in Canada with my six-year-old niece, Olivia Kwan.
Hello, Liv.
Hello, Tara.
So we just watched Face Off. It's the first episode of the season. And why don't you tell us what the challenge was?
The challenge was making monsters?
Well, sort of. They put them in two teams, right?
Life and death.
Right.
I think that I like life best because I don't like watching people die and they're alive. So I like that better. Because I don't like watching people die.
So, and also, this is the life challenge was different than what you usually see on Face Off. Because you've watched the show before, and you know usually it's like monstrous kind of creatures, right?
Yes.
So this was different. That was fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, which was your favorite from the life team?
My life.
You can describe what she looked like because I can't remember what the girl's name was either.
She had blue hair.
She sure did. And blue eyebrows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did her model look like?
I liked how she put, like, pink flowers piling on her hair. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, her skin was blue.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a bright blue.
Yeah.
Maybe a little adding of green.
Mm-hmm. And you had a favorite on the death team, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that guy's, his name was Vince, right?
Mm-hmm.
And can you describe what his creature looked like?
His creature, it was looking sort of like a vampire.
Mm-hmm. He was very pale.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had sort of bones on his cheeks, right? Mm-hmm. That were coming towards his mouth.
And it was looking like tusks, but on his cheeks growing to where tusks would grow.
You're exactly right. They were like tusks, like really skinny tusks.
It had red stuff, and it made it look like blood on the tusks.
Kind of. But he didn't win. And your favorite girl, my favorite girl, didn't win either. Can you describe the one who won?
It was Mom's favorite girl.
Yep.
She was a lettuce head.
Mm-hmm. She did look like she had a lettuce head.
Didn't she say she was a lettuce head?
That's what we all called her, but I don't think that she was necessarily supposed to, if it was supposed to be lettuce. It was definitely supposed to be a plant, because she had a lot of leaves, and she was all green.
You already described some of that.
Yeah.
So she was green. She had this little leafy skirt on.
Yep.
She had a little bit of red flowers.
Mm-hmm. And are you, your hat, she wasn't your favorite, but you were okay with her winning?
Mm-hmm. And what was your favorite one?
My favorite one was the same as yours. I liked the blue eyebrow girls model from the Life team.
She also, her creature's dress was like a bright yellow and then a soft blue scarf around the waist and then coming down to the feet.
Yep.
Which was nice.
I agree. So do you think the right two people went home? Do you think the people that had the worst designs got kicked out this week?
Yes.
Yeah. So what are you, who at this, I know it's very early still, but who do you hope will win this season?
The girl with blue hair and blue eyebrows model.
Yeah, just because of her look? You like her blue hair and her blue eyebrows? Or you think she's talented, or both?
None of those. I like it because of her creature. I liked her model.
Well, thank you very much, Liv. We'll talk to you again next week.
See you soon. Bye then.
Thank you, Olivia, for those comments. So my sister, Leah, lets Liv watch this show because Liv really likes art. And she feels like it's nice for her to get an idea of the different kinds of careers that you can have if you enjoy art. And doesn't allow Liv to watch Project Runway, even though she thinks she would like the drawing and clothes making parts because they fight too much and she doesn't think that's appropriate. But Face Off is a show where they never fight at all. And Monty, you've talked about this before. Why don't you start us off?
Everyone on the show really seems to root for each other. Yep. When someone gets eliminated, it's like on So You Think You Can Dance. All their competitors are sad for them. It's fairly frequent that someone can't open their mold by themselves, and instead of what you'd get on a more cutthroat show like Survivor, where everyone would just stand around and laugh at them for being too dumb to make a small mold, people will stop their own projects, come over, and help them open the mold, which this sort of cooperative competitiveness is just baffling in the current reality show world.
I wonder if it's because, you know, special effects jobs are so team-based and whereas like fashion and obviously stuff like Survivor, but they're like solo efforts, whether on a reality show or in the workplace. I mean, it also could be a producer note, of course, be nice, because that's the kind of show we want to make. But I just wonder if the profession sort of engenders that.
Well, you'd think so, but you can't make it on your own as a model, but the people on America's Next Top Model are the worst people in the world to each other.
Touche. Yes.
And in every other way.
Yeah. Now, Sarah, this was your first experience watching the show, yes?
It was. It had been recommended to me here and elsewhere, and I really enjoyed it. I am a process nerd, as you know, especially about processes that I'm completely unfamiliar with. So it's bunt nip in that way. And I also liked, I don't know if this is cause or effect in terms of the fact that it is a much more cooperative environment than the usual I'm not here to make frenzy type of competition reality. But I liked that they're not quite as, they don't seem as like produced and polished as contestants, as a lot of other shows do, contestants do. They seemed a little more like real and not, you know, popped out of a mold, as it were, with like whatever Studio City Central reality casting. So I liked that about it. The host, I have to say, sort of dovetails with my latest I Am Not a Crackpot, which is most reality show hosts are completely extraneous.
Yes.
You know, free the voiceover artists of the world because we just don't need.
And this show,
ladies,
they actually just like, all she does is like bookend parts, like all the stuff about, you know, paintbrushes down and all that kind of stuff. They have the contestants themselves handle. So
yeah, she's never there.
This show is on the forefront of removing the host. I think there are a couple.
She's here because she's related to the mentor.
Right.
Who does know what he's talking about and provides a lot of value.
I love him. He's great. Yeah.
He was not in this episode, right?
Right.
I felt like I missed him.
Well, of course, in this episode, the show had not yet begun, as they kept telling us.
It was the zeroth challenge, as you put in your post. You were not a fan of this twist.
It doesn't make any sense to have an episode where they keep telling you the show hasn't begun. The show has begun.
Yes.
There's commercials and cameras.
Yes.
And we're watching it as you wrote.
It was such a semantic herring. Like who cares? Like, it just makes the people that got eliminated first feel extra special bad. And speaking about the people who got eliminated first and who feel
extra special bad,
let's talk about what's his name, Scott?
Scott, yes. Scott. His qualification, in the middle of the frenzy of backgrounds that you get in a first episode, there are these guys who teach at the Tom Savini Monster Makeup School or have done haunted house work for years. His background is that 3 years ago, he took a monster makeup class with his son, which is charming and a great bonding experience, but does not qualify you to compete with professionals.
Mm-hmm. No. He would be really great guy to have in your back pocket for Halloween.
Yeah.
And
I'm not even sure about that, though.
Well, better than I would do. You know, like, I think my makeup skills would end at, like, Wicked Witch of the West. You know, like, well, here's some green paint. Splosh. You're done.
Right, but you would do the eye sockets. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he did sort of have a magazine collage sort of aesthetic going on, which is like, here's some fishnet stuff. Let's glue this onto the jacket. Has no practical use, but, you know, fishnets, right? Yeah. Here we go. Yeah, and the nothing meshed, like, the makeup was really kind of scarred and old looking, but everything else about the getup was new and fresh. It was really weird.
He seemed sad that he was not on the death team because he delivered.
He wants to embrace death after this showing and pays off. Poor guy.
Poor thing.
Because there's maybe one thing he can do, and if the challenge isn't do that, then...
Yeah, the whole pre-elimination thing was it did bother me, and it's kind of super sad that guy was the first victim of what is totally meaningless. As you say, the show has started, but
Sarah, you were saying,
guys, at least he's not named Sig Neutron.
He does have that going for him.
He is a winner in that one way, which is a pretty big way, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if he's any relation to Jimmy.
So, Monty, early picks is who do you think is going to win the season?
They're all an undifferentiated mass to me right now.
They started with how many people? 16, right?
That's 16,
too many. That's way too many. Unless you're on So You Think You Can Dance and you're in Partners, it's more than any person can keep straight.
Yeah, especially because of the way the shows are edited, the two losers got a bunch of screen time. So I know who Scott is, and I know Scott's background, and that does me no good, because he's gone.
We'll visit his hometown, the newspaper is, local loser! Yeah.
There's lady with blue eyebrows, and there's guy who had that stupid hat.
Yeah, and Cake Lady.
Oh yeah, Cake Lady. She won. I liked her.
Yeah.
I hope that she won because she used a piping bag to put on the veins, and I'm hoping that every single challenge she brings out another cake-related skill.
Yay, it's
there's like a bride
challenge.
And groom.
How did you make those ridges on the forehead? They're fondant.
Well, that's a good... Go ahead.
I was going to say, the other thing I liked about this episode is how they handled the judge handoff. I feel like other shows might have just been, well, this judge is not here this season. Let's not mention her. And here's, you know, somebody that kind of looks like her. But this, you know, they lost V, she's makeup, right?
Yeah.
They lost V this season because she's working on a movie. So they had her briefly on this first episode to basically do a handoff and say, you're in good hands. Here's this new judge. She's really great, too. And, you know, everybody was kind of jazzed about it. You know, sad jazzed, bittersweet. But I thought it was really good. And I thought, like, it's just this show is just like a little bit classier than all the other reality shows I find. And for all the reasons we have said. But also, I thought that was a good indicator of it as well.
Yeah, I like that they warned us she's not going to be here, as opposed to just having Isaac Mizrahi gone 3/4 of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was wondering if maybe this season, I only picked this up, so this is my third.
This is our second.
Second season? Yeah, watching it. And last season, there was a girl, I want to say her name was Carolyn or something along that lines, but she was basically like a really good makeup artist. And a lot of her challenges, she, you know, obviously geared them towards that. She wasn't so great with the appliances, but she was really good at the makeup stuff. And those were amazing, and they're very different. So I'm kind of hoping this season we get some more challenges that are sort of speak to that, or maybe just challenges that highlight the different disciplines that all go in together rather than sort of like each one be everything. Because I really dug her stuff, and I found that as it went along, she kind of got lost. I thought she would go further along than she did, but I would love to see that this season.
I agree. Sometimes they get into a rut where everybody is making the same kind of mold for every single challenge. And it's neat to make, watch people sculpt clay and then cast it and then make a latex mask out of that, and then paint the latex mask. But there's so many other cool things in the shop, and I want to see people use all of it.
Well, the one that, with the filigree forehead and the, you know, the kind of the Indian goddess look, one from this week?
Yes.
I thought that was really great. And I thought that was something that you don't usually see. You usually get more of the, you know, monster with horns or mutant kind of stuff just because it's showier, right? But I thought that one was really great. And like it really kind of nailed a tone and a look that other ones just seem a little more generic, you know, when they go after, you know, like, here's a devil, but he's a desert devil, you know, whatever. Right. So hopefully more of that. The other thing that bugs me about the sort of the judging and is when they say, you should have done this and just done a different backstory. I always kind of, it annoys me when the backstory that people create is part of what they judge or seem to like put a lot of, you know, a lot into, you know?
Well, that is a sort of the Emperor has no clothes aspect of the show that I don't love, is that it does seem like it's very, like it shouldn't be that dependent on backstory, but at the same time, without the backstory, it's all just kind of undifferentiated elven peoples with fishnet. And it's like how I think it's necessary for the judges to be like to judge on intention.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the stories come in. But it is sort of like, yeah, you know, without the backstory, these are all just kind of blobby looking RPG characters.
When these people are in the workforce, they're not creating the backstory. People are creating, you know, they're, you know, here's this guy, he's been roaming the desert, and now he, you know, drives around the outback of Australia looking for gas and whatever.
I don't know.
Do that guy, right?
I think that's true of protagonists, but I imagine that you probably have to bring some kind of creativity to it for, you know, the supporting characters who may not be fleshed out in the script.
Oh, that's true.
Don't you think?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
But I, do mean, I don't think it's their primary skill. Like, I think they're being given direction more often than they're not.
Sarah, you were saying?
I think that going forward, they're probably getting more. I mean, I haven't watched the show before, but I assume they get more specific briefs. And then the judges can sort of judge on, like, how close they came to achieving that vision that they were given for a challenge.
Yeah.
That would be better for me as a viewer if that is how that worked.
That generally is how it works.
Yeah, I don't mind them coming up with their own stories for stuff, but I just don't like it when it becomes such an important part of the judging process. Like, I just don't think that's what they're here for. You know, they're not creative writers. They're, you know, right. Makeup people. They're special effects people, and I think they should be judged on that. So sometimes I feel like the backstory is just sort of used when the judges can't really figure out why they like or don't like it or why it didn't work. They're like, well, the backstory, backstory, magical element. You know, it's the sixth element after love is backstory.
I kind of enjoy the moment when the designer has to just make up some crazy nonsense to explain why this creature makes sense, even though it obviously doesn't.
Yeah.
It almost never works, but I enjoy seeing them sweat. It also reminds me of the reality show Work of Art, which was...
Oh, best.
Fine artists.
You're the other one who watched that. Awesome.
Yeah. The best thing about that was that you'd consistently have art students who were really good at artist statements who could completely save blobby nothingness by making up a great story on what statement they were making.
I always wished, and one of the judges, Jerry Saltz, who writes for New York Magazine about art, used to say this, that he wished they just ran the crits uncut online, because I thought that was hilarious. Like, I was a creative writing major, and it's like, this is wall-to-wall bullshit. But sometimes the bullshit was a work of art of its own. I always enjoyed that part. He's like, it's the circle of life. And you're like, no, it isn't. It's just a circle. You ran out of time.
And we lost Sarah. Sarah's internet is down.
That's bullshit.
So I guess we will just move on without her. Thanks so much, Time Warner Cable. You are an excellent, excellent company.
Hello, lawsuit.
All right, we will push on without Sarah. It's time to go around the dial. I'll start us off. Ancient Aliens season started, guys. It's an exciting time to be alive. Mm-hmm. Not only did Ancient Aliens start a new season, and by the way, this week's episode was The Reptilians, all about the reptilian race that lives among us and controls the government.
Finally.
That doesn't sound very ancient.
Well, they've been here for a while.
Okay.
Yes, they're just a, you know... The comet that created the moon, they didn't land on it. It landed on them. So in addition to Ancient Aliens, the guy that you all know as Aliens Guy, the guy, you know, with the hair and the bad tan.
Yeah, that guy.
Giorgio
Tekkonokamopoulos.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He has a show that, he has a new show. It's very exciting. It's called In Search of Aliens. And it debuts right after Ancient Aliens.
Oh.
Aliens double pack, guys. So what they've done with In Search of Aliens, which is not connected with In Search of ... with Leonard Nimoy from the 70s, I'm sad to say, is he is sort of a travel log show about him globe hopping, trying to find out about alien mysteries. The first one being the alien connection with Atlantis. Where was Atlantis? And it was probably the reason why Atlantis, you know, it's like, oh, it's in the Mediterranean. No, it's in the middle of the Atlantic. No, it's actually off the coast of Portugal. The reason why all these answers all seem like they've weaved themselves throughout history is because, of course, Atlantis was a mobile alien spaceship of gigantic proportions.
Of course. Huh. What else could it be?
Yes.
That matches all the stories.
Yes. And so Ancient Aliens double bill with In Search of Aliens. So stupid, so delicious. Monty.
Well, San Diego Comic-Con was last weekend. And for someone
heard of it?
For someone like me, it's just a fire hose of news with trailers for Arrow and Flash and Gotham and Constantine. And I just heard yesterday that this Evil Dead TV series that Sam Raimi is allegedly is allegedly going to star Bruce Campbell.
Yep.
Oh.
But the thing I'm actually excited about is that they have a date for the Adam West Batman series finally coming out on DVD.
Ah.
It's coming out in November, and it's going to have little Hot Wheels Batmobile in it.
Oh, that's fun.
And the reason it's taken so long to come out on DVD is that it was full of stupid guest stars. Like, while Batman and Robin would be climbing up a wall, Colonel Klink would stick his head out the window.
Right.
And Batman would ignore the fact that a literal Nazi is right there, and he'd go back to chasing the Riddler or whatever. So I guess they had to clear every single guest star.
And they had to clear all the font rights for the Biff Boffo cuzzing punch thing. I watched like four episodes of Batman a couple days ago on MeTV, which is basically just reruns from the 60s and 70s as far as I can tell. And it kind of holds up. It's still really great.
IFC has been showing it also, if you want to watch it.
Oh, really?
In HD.
In HD? Yeah, no.
60s HD.
John Astin as Riddler is great. It's awesome. I'm totally. And I got to figure out when I got to record and watch more, because I used to watch that. That used to be my 3:30 show coming home from school. They would air it at 3:30 and 4 on the local, you know, crap channel. And I used to love it. And I never really understood it as farce, you know, when I was like 5 or whatever. But so you kind of get to enjoy it all over again. I dig it.
I prefer Adam West to Christian Bale. There, I said it.
Yeah.
Since we've been off the air, FYI, which is what A&E's biography channel has been rebranded to this summer, has started showing a series called Married at First Sight, which is exactly what you think it is. It's based on a Danish format, apparently, where couples or singles who are completely desperate and have given up on all other ideas have said, yes, I'm going to let four people you say are experts in the matter of love match me up with one other person of the opposite sex from this tiny pool of 50 people. That's 50 people of both sexes, so 25. And I'm going to marry this person, sight unseen. The first time I'm ever going to even find out what his or her name is when I see them at the altar.
And it always works perfectly?
Well, the thing is...
How many people have been killed?
So... I'm not sure how it worked in Denmark. The way the American version works is they get married, they go on a honeymoon, they move in together, and then at the end of a month, they decide whether they want to stay married. So even though the whole conceit of the show is you're married, they're obviously just fake married because I'm sure FYI or any other TV network doesn't want to actually pony up for proper divorce proceedings because that's complicated. But apparently in the first season of the Danish version, none of the couples were still together after a year. Surprise, surprise. One of them made it maybe two a year, I think. And so far there's three couples. One hate each other. One seem to really like each other. Although in that couple, the guy's mother is in the process of dying of cancer, so maybe he's not 100% making great emotional decisions right now because stuff's going on in his life. And the third couple, he's really into her, and she thinks he is ugly. And it was obvious the second that she saw him at the altar because she started crying immediately. Furthermore, she has already been not just a contestant on The Bachelor, she was also on Bachelor Pad. So no one can say that Jamie Otis hasn't tried every avenue toward finding love on television, because clearly she has. She went into this very sincerely, and if Doug is not the right man for her, it's clearly because of his many shortcuts.
Jamie Otis has ridden every elevator in TV Town.
Yeah. So that's Married at First Sight. Elevator joke. It is fascinating. Yeah, I get it.
I have a question about the first couple that hate each other.
Yeah, they're... Is the question that they're fucking? Because yes, they are.
No. Oh. The question was, do they hate each other so much that they're going to fall in love?
I don't think so. No. They both seem super intense, and like their kinds of intensity do not mesh at all. That what actually needed to happen was for one of them to be easygoing and the other one to be intense. But some people
The intensity of a box of baking soda. She a jug of vinegar.
But some people on the forums have speculated that the only reason they were paired up, and I'm not saying I corroborate this, but it does seem to be a fact that they are both African-American, and there may not have been a whole bunch of those in the pool of that. If those were very important aspects of the person that they were trying to be matched with, then... If the experts were like, well, they're both black, I guess this will work out great. Apparently not so. But as I said, they are having sex. So at least there's that.
Well, this show sounds great, but here's my pitch.
Please.
Divorced by America.
Yes.
We get couples that have been married 10 years, and the home audience votes on whether or not they get to stay married.
See, that's almost what Marriage Boot Camp was, except for the voting aspect, because I think if we had all had a say, none of those couples would still be together at the end of that season. So, yeah, Married at First Sight airs Tuesdays at 9, 6 on the West Coast on FYI. Try and find it and then watch it.
All right, Tara, this is very exciting. We're serializing a segment here for the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Everyone in this room is now Domer.
So I had a couple of weeks off from watching, well, I did watch Under the Dome, but I wasn't writing about it. While I was in Canada, the great Nick Reinwald Jones covered it for me. Thank you, Nick. So I was not here on the podcast to complain about the latest incredibly stupid thing that happened in my absence, which is apparently characters played by Eddie Cahill. So remember, he was Rachel's much, 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 scandalously much younger boyfriend on Friends. And Sherry Stringfield, who was a young doctor when ER started in 1994. And Dwight Yoakam, who is 57 years old, supposedly are all playing characters who all were in high school in 1988.
Uh-huh.
If I were Sherry Stringfield, I would be incredibly insulted by the idea that Dwight Yoakam and I were peers, because they are actually 10 years apart. And I think Eddie Cahill is even younger than that. But anyway, the show is ridiculous, and that is only the latest thing to have been ridiculous on Under the Dome.
Everyone in this room is now dumb
Domer.
For having listened to it.
Sometime last week, I forget exactly what day, it was Batman Day. I don't quite understand how Batman Day started.
Yeah, dude. What is Batman Day? Monty, you must know.
No idea.
Oh! Oh,
it might have... Okay, I think it's supposedly Batman's 75th anniversary, if you count it just right, and it coincidentally happens during Comic-Con.
Oh.
Oh, how about that?
Okay.
So it was Batman Day, and everybody was wishing everybody else on Twitter a happy Batman Day for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And this happened on Batman Day, and Batman is a TV show, so that's how it ties into TV. We live on the second floor of a house here in Los Angeles, and I was walking by my window when I see a middle-aged fellow with his small mop dog picking up his dog's poo with a little plastic bag. Right? That's what you do.
Sure.
Then he drops the plastic bag on my grass and starts walking away. So I open the door and I say, "I think you forgot something, sir," I say sarcastically. Uh-huh. And he mumbles something about, "Oh, it's just a small bag," and starts walking away.
What?
And that, oh, the gamma rays. Oh, Hulk mad. Dave smashed. So angry. I'm not one for conflict, as Tara can tell you. I try to avoid it. I won't send food back just because I don't want to deal with the waiter.
You are one for extremely spiteful revenge, though, that can't be traced back to you.
That is true. So I call Gordon, who is my 85-pound Dane Pointer mix. He's a big boy. Mm-hmm. And we go for a sudden walk. We follow this gentleman, and he walks all the way up our street and all the way back down, kind of looking behind him once in a while. I don't quite know if he's Grok that I'm following him, and I'm the guy who was yelling at him from the second-story window. But what I did when I first came out is I picked up that bag of dog poo, and I started to follow him, and eventually, after about 20 minutes, he goes home. Now I know where he lives. So, take the bag of dog poo, walk up his walkway, and we deposit said dog poo in his mailbox for him to dispose of at his leisure. So, my tiny triumph is Batman Day poo justice. All right, everybody, you know what that music means. It means it is time for another canon argument. This one comes from our guest, Monty Ashley. Monty, take it away.
All right. South Park has always relied on shock, grossness, and children behaving inappropriately. And I propose that no episode embodies those three elements better than the fourth episode of season 5, Scott Tenorman Must Die. Eric Cartman is usually a figure of pure malice, so it's interesting that he spends most of this episode being repeatedly foiled by an apparently superior opponent. After being tricked by ninth grader Scott Tenorman into paying $6 for a handful of pubic hair, Cartman embarks on a series of failed attempts to get even. First, he simply demands his money back, but Scott says no. He disguises himself as a tax collector named Chris Christopherson, but Scott does a short-changing routine right out of Abbott and Costello and ends up stealing even more money. Cartman claims that Courtney Love is in town, but Scott tricks him into riding a bus to an imaginary pube fair. In uncharacteristic desperation, Cartman claims his grandmother is sick, and Scott makes him grovel and beg before burning Cartman's money in front of him. We're used to seeing him rampage over everything and everyone in his path, so this is an interesting change. It's pretty rare in South Park's 17-season history that Cartman is ever someone the audience feels sorry for him. Yeah. Well... But this first clip is pretty much rock bottom for him. Please play the first clip.
Here you go.
Oh, wow. Thanks a lot, Scott.
But just one thing before I give it to you.
What?
I want you to beg for it.
Huh?
Just get down on your knees and beg me for the money.
Why?
Do you want your grandma to live or not?
Please, Scott, give me my money.
No. Get down on your knees. Lower your head. And say, I beg you to give me back my money.
I beg you to give me back my money.
Now say, I'm a little piggy.
What?
Say it.
I'm a little piggy.
Here's my snout.
Here's my snout.
oink, oink, oink.
Oink, oink, oink.
Now dance, little piggy. Dance and oink for me.
I'm a little piggy, here's my snack. Oink, oink, oink. Now give me back my money.
So Cartman is as low as he's ever been at this point. He calls all the kids to his garage to explain his next ridiculous plan, and they abandon him. He has a plan to teach a pony to bite off Scott's wiener, but that just results in a gratuitous sex joke. Uncle Jimbo and Ned actually support Cartman, but their reconnaissance just teaches them that Scott likes Radiohead and results in another gratuitous sex joke, just so no one forgets what show they're watching. Cartman's attempt to edit a Radiohead video to humiliate Scott just humiliates Cartman instead. Finally, we get to it. Cartman organizes a chili con carnival, which honestly sounds like the best idea in the world to me.
Yep.
I would totally go to a chili cook-off with carnival rides right now. In fact, at any time. But apparently this was just invented for the show, and this is an outrage.
Simpsons did it.
Finally, the story reaches its inevitable conclusion. After the audience has been tricked into feeling sorry for him, Cartman achieves his terrible vengeance. I believe we have a clip.
My mom and dad are dead?
I came just in time to see Mr. Dinkins giving his report to Officer Barbrady. And, of course, to steal the bodies. After a night with the hacksaw, I was all ready to put on my chili con carnival so that I could tell you personally about your parents' demise. And, of course, feed you your chili. Do you like it? Do you like it, Scott? I call it Mr. and Mrs. Tenorman chili.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Nya, 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 nya. I made you eat your parents. Nya, 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 nya. Jesus Christ, dude.
When Cartman finally wins, it's gross, it's shocking, and it's kids behaving spectacularly poorly. It's the South Parkiest moment there is, and for that reason, I believe Scott Tenorman Must Die deserves to be in the canon. Thank you for your consideration.
Tara.
You should go first.
Me? All right. I've already said on this podcast, I think when we did the last South Park, that Scott Tenorman Must Die was a slam dunk sure thing for me to vote into the canon. And my opinion has not changed. The episode's pretty funny throughout, but really it comes down to this moment, which is probably like one of the seminal what the fuck moments in TV history. It's right up there with Black Mirror. The first episode when that thing happens. And I just want to talk about the thing that really clinched it for me is the really considered timing of the reveal. Like, the episode's sort of going all around and Cartman's just getting one up time and time again. And the endgame realization is just well-timed. You see where it's going about a minute or so before Scott does. So you spend that time wondering if South Park's really going to go there or whether it's just, you know, him, you know, making him think that he's eating his parents. And you just get to like, oh, is this happening? Is this really happening? Like, you get a whole like 45 seconds of that and then it happens. And like, oh my God, it happened. They really did that. And it's just like one of those moments where my like picked up my jaw from the floor and just like, wow, that was amazing. And South Park, you know, since then has gone to the thing where they substituted, you know, weird situations and stories just for being quick. And I stopped watching a long time ago. But this one and the first time we ever saw Mr. Hankey, and you have to go back to a time before there was talking poo and poo emojis in our culture to realize just what a big deal Mr. Hankey was the first time you saw him. But this one seems, I think, to trump Mr. Hankey and bring Cartman to a whole other level of evil. And I think you nailed it. It's South Park at its South Parkiest and one of my favorite What the Fuck TV moments for sure. Tar.
I was so with this episode right till the end. I know this is a weird thing to say about South Park, which has always been about like heightened absurd situations, but I like it best when the humor of the show comes from kids acting like kids, which is what most of this episode is, including Cartman getting on a bus because he believes the story about the pube fair and the Kris Kristofferson joke. Like, there's a lot of funny right up until the end. And then it's like, well, now this character is a completely different kind of person. He's not just a little asshole. He's a murderer. Or, I mean, he didn't actually murder them, but he's a cannibal by proxy. And I feel like this is sort of like, you know, when the Simpsons stopped being as good as it was when the stories stopped being about families doing family things. This, to me, is like the shark jumping moment for South Park.
Really? You think so?
Yeah,
because I always thought South Park was so out there to start with. Like,
it definitely,
it's a show where a kid dies every single episode
I know.
Over and over again.
I know. But this is like, for me, this was a different thing. I can't explain it better than what I've already said.
But you like Bastards.
This is beyond Bastard. He fed his parents to a kid. This really, and then he's like, oh, the tears.
I don't know who I'm married to anymore.
And then he's like rhapsodizing over like Scott's tears taste so good. Like now we're in Hannibal territory. Yeah. Like this is, I don't know.
It's Hannibal 10 years earlier.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm like I said, I was with it like 95% of the way. And then the ending for me undercuts everything that I like.
Wow.
About the episode, so
we're going to have a big, long talk tonight, Missy.
I'm sorry. And Sarah is not here to vote. So
we don't have her vote.
I don't know what her vote is.
Oh, no. All right. Should we get it? Think you can text her and get it?
you can if you want to pause the recording.
Hang on. Wait.
You could call her and
That's
then putting her on speaker.
That's what I'm doing.
Oh, my.
Unprecedented.
It is unprecedented.
Well, she was going to be part of this
Absolutely
episode.
She was. She,
so she's watched it.
Certainly she has.
So let's see. Beep, beep, boop, boop, boop.
I don't have that much invested in this because in Extra Hot Great 1.0, I successfully got something in the canon, so my legacy is already assured.
I had no idea Dave felt this strongly about it, that he would go to these lengths. Is she on speaker? Or is it ringing?
It's ringing.
Okay, I'm being quiet.
Come on, Sarah, pick up. Pick up! We know you're not doing anything. You were supposed to be doing this. No! I'm calling her back. I'm going to give her one call back. One call back.
Could always
well no all right, so Tara, may I assume then you were voting in the negative?
Yes, but I was gonna say you could always leave this a cliffhanger and then she could give her vote in the
next
episode.
Oh, that's true. That's exciting. Well, let's see what this call brings us here.
Okay,
one of the things I do really like is that he does act like a kid for just that moment when he goes nya 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 nya, and
he does
swaps back into
that
horrifying
right,
monster
Tara?
Mode.
All right. So I guess we're going to have to do the cliffhanger thing because now I can't even call her. All right. Will South Park go into the canon or will it not? As we sit here on the precipice of an answer, Tara says no. Dave says yes. What will Sarah say? Yes or
dun,
no?
Dun, dun.
Tune in sometime in the future for the answer. Yes.
This episode is a shambles.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week, and Tara has our winner.
I guess I have both, because Sarah's not here. Nope. My winner of the week is the Mindy Project.
Oh, wait, Sarah's on the phone! Sarah's on the phone! Wait, hang on, Sarah, hang on. All right. Okay. Hello, Sarah. You're on speakerphone. We need to know. We just went through the canon. Tara's voting no for South Park episode 4 of season 5, Scott Tederman Must Die. I was an enthusiastic yes, so we have a tie vote. But since we know you watched it, you were supposed to be on this episode, but Time Warner screwed us over. We need to know, Sarah Bunting, what was your vote on Scott Tederman Must Die?
Reluctant and surprising vote for me, but after the 18th repetition of the word pubes, it came clear to me, much though I didn't want to, much though I don't usually like this show, I was going to have to vote yes.
Yeah! Shocker!
Thank you, Sarah. We'll talk to you very
soon.
Sorry, Tara. That's okay.
Cellspark, Season 5, Episode 4, where Scott Tenorman must die. By the grace of Sarah D. Bunting, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, now it's really time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara, who has our winner, besides, of course, Monty Ashley and South Park?
Winner of the week is the Mindy Project because it has reunited the Tortellis of Cheers. It announced last week that Rhea Perlman will be playing Danny's mother in the upcoming season of the show. And since that means she was once married to Dan Hedaya, that makes that's formerly her husband from Cheers, her right. scumbag husband. That's all.
And
kind of a letdown after the big Sarah speakerphone call.
Yeah.
I also looked up a loser because Sarah had a loser and now she is not here.
Right.
Losers of the week, I guess, are community fans because it was announced at Comic-Con that when the show moves to Yahoo Screen, its latest home, they're not going to release all of the episodes at a time. You will not be able to binge watch Community unless you wait for them all to air. They're going to be time released in the normal fashion.
Oh, no. The gnashing of teeth.
Yes.
The gnashing of teeth. All right, guys, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what time it is?
Time to call Sarah again?
Nope. It's game time.
Oh!
All right, here's how it's going to work. This is the seventh game time of the season.
But,
since Sarah's not here, you are going to play for the hosts. Oh. Monty is going to play for the guests. And if you win, there's going to be a little face-off between you and Sarah in the future. So points are on the line.
Ooh.
Deferred points for a guest for a host win. Immediate points for a guest win.
Okay.
Here we go. Today's game. Oh, so the standings are 3 for Tara. Guests right behind with 2 points. Sarah has 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
Today's game time comes from Ellen Curie, who earns herself an extra credit. Good for one extra hot great mini topic of her choosing. Today we are playing Back to School, which will test your knowledge of TV's fictional institutions of learning.
Oh my.
All right. I am going to read you the name of a school. You have to tell me what show it's from. You can ask. Answer right away, 2 points. You can ask for a clue. I will give you a clue. It could be the, usually it's a character on the show, but it could be something else. And after that clue, a correct answer is worth 1 point.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready to play Back to School?
We will be once we know who Picky chooses to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So we're going to go to Monty and then back to Tara.
Yes.
All right.
Are you ready to start?
Yes.
Yes.
Here we go. Monty, yes. Your school is California University. I want to say you have 3 correct answers, 3 shows that this has been on. California University. Chances are these shows took place in California.
Hmm. And at a university.
Mm. Oh, Gordon ear flaps in the background.
I need
guess
a hint.
Gordon. All right. Zach Morris went to California University.
Then I will say Saved by the Bell.
I'm sorry, we needed Saved by the Bell the college years. The college years, because they went to college.
All right,
the
I
other
see what
correct
you're saying.
Answer is Beverly Hills 90210.
And the other one, as I let the dog out,
the L World.
The L word. Sure.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Hearst College. Yes, as in Randolph.
Yeah. Hint.
Veronica went to this.
Oh, of course, Veronica Mars.
All right, 1 point. 1 point. Tara, you're keeping score?
Yes, I am.
All right, Monty.
Yeah.
Greendale Community College.
Community.
Answer was right in there.
For
kind of a
2
game.
Points.
2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Pembroke University, Tara.
Hint.
Topanga Lawrence.
Boy Meets World.
1 point. Monty. Mm-hmm. University of Northeastern California.
Hint.
Stephen Karp with a K. Stephen Karp.
No idea.
Undeclared.
Undeclared is the correct answer, but no points for Taro. We do not steal points in this game. It is a gentleman and gentlewoman's game.
Yes.
Harbor school.
Harbor school. Harbor hint.
Seth Cohen went to Harbor School.
Oh, fuck. The OC.
Correct. All right, Monty. Beacon Hills High School. Beacon Hills High School.
Hint.
Scott McCall goes to Beacon Hills High School.
Felicity?
Scott McCall of the Teen Wolf.
Oh.
Oh.
St. Sebastian's School for Wicked Girls.
Say.
The Simpsons?
They never let her
oot
at the St. Sebastian School for Wicked Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Chilton Academy. Chilton Academy.
Gilmore Girls.
2 points. Westbridge School.
Hint.
Richie Campbell.
I know, but I don't know it.
The New Adventures of Old Christine.
Fuck,
yeah,
I did know it.
Yep. All right, Chelsea College. Chelsea College, Monty.
Hint.
Chelsea College is in New York, New York. It's a show that takes place in New York.
Oh, well, that yes. show, obviously.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
No idea.
CSI New York. The answer was right there, looking you in the face. One of maybe 7 shows that take place in New York. Eastland Boarding School.
The Facts of Life.
2 points. Dade University. Dade University.
Hint.
Yeah! There's no hint, so I just made that up.
What?
All right, I'll give you another.
No hint.
Because.
Okay, all right.
All right, I will, I'll give you that hint. Yeah, glasses. Yeah. Yeah, and glasses. Those are your hints.
I'm going to say I don't know.
CSI Miami.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. All right. Now I get it.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Chadwick College.
Hint.
Max Bickford.
That does not help me.
Nope.
I don't know.
If that didn't help you, nothing will. The Education of Max Bickford.
Nope.
All right. For Monty. Crawford University. There's about 45 of these. I'm going to have to do a little evening out towards the end. Just FYI. Crawford University.
Hint.
For Monty. Matt Camden went to Crawford University. Matt Camden. He of the Camdens.
Yeah. I've heard of the Camdens.
Camdens.
Just let me remember which show that was, which I don't know. Are they One Tree Hill?
Close.
Seventh Heaven.
That's the same show.
Also a WB show with a number in the name.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Atlantic State University.
Hint.
Washington, D.C. area.
There's no Atlantic State.
And that was... Never mind.
I don't know.
Bones.
Okay.
Bones. All right. Monty.
Yeah.
Western, this is number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Western Las Vegas University. Las Vegas University.
Ah, that sounds awfully familiar. But I need a hint.
All right. Gil Grissom.
CSI.
Correct. All right. Tara.
Mm-hmm.
This is number 18.
Okay.
Taking us into our first score break.
Yes.
Tribeca Prep.
Hint.
Alex Russo goes to Tribeca Prep. Will Tara get this one?
Oh, the Carrie Diaries?
The Wizards of Waverly Place.
Oh, no, I never would have.
Perhaps just Wizards of Waverly Place. All right, so.
Monty has 5, I have 7.
All right, very close game. Lots of questions left. I think, guys... It's anybody's game.
Yep.
I don't know about that.
Have faith in yourself. All right, Monty. Worthington University.
Hint.
Joey Potter went to Worthington University. Joey Potter went there. Our motto is, how you doing? No, it's not. Different Joey.
Is Joey Potter on Dawson's Creek?
Yes.
Oh,
he
my
is.
God.
1 point. Groff Community College, Tara. G R O F F.
Okay,
Groff.
Hint.
Haley Smith Fisher went to that community college.
Is this One Tree Hill?
No. And no reason you would get this. That's from American Dad.
Nope.
All right, here's a tough one for Monty. The school, Blue Mountain State.
Hint.
The person that went to Blue Mountain State is Kevin Thad Castle. They went to Blue Mountain State.
The White Shadow?
They went to Blue Mountain State. Say Blue Mountain State.
Blue Mountain State.
Yeah, that was the right answer, but too late.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, I only know about it because I had to create a forum for it.
It's on Spike or something.
It's on like...
It's one of
it?
Those. Yeah. Something like that.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Marlin Academy.
Hint.
Francis Wilkerson went to Marlin Academy.
Nope.
That's a show called Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, Monty.
Uh-huh.
Miami South University.
Hint.
Well, this is in Miami. That was a hint provided, but let me see. Let's say, I don't know if this person went there, but I'm going to say Angel. Angel is a character on this show. Angel.
Is it Angel?
Incorrect.
I'm the worst.
It's a show that takes place in Miami.
Dexter.
Oh. Yep. Dexter. All right. Tara?
Yeah.
Texas Methodist University.
Friday Night Lights.
2 points. Monty.
Yeah.
University of New York.
Hint.
University of New York. Miss Porter went there.
No idea.
And her first name. Wait, I'm not done yet.
Oh.
Her first name was Felicity.
Yep.
Wow. Well, then Felicity.
Sometimes the hints just, you know, give you a free point. Tara?
Yeah.
Our Lady of Perpetual Sorrow, Catholic. It's so long, it's actually scrolled off the thing. Catholic school.
Hint.
Let's see. London Tipton went to Our Lady of. But wait, three answers for this. Three possible answers for this one.
I don't know.
That could be That 70s Show, The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody,
right.
Or Glee.
Nope.
Yeah. All right. Monty?
Yeah.
Pendleton State University.
Hint.
Dick Solomon went to this university. Dick
Third
Solomon.
Rock from the Sun.
That's good for 1 point. Barcliff Academy.
Hint.
Daniel Van De Kamp. Daniel Van De Kamp.
Oh, I say.
Danielle. Sorry, I'm sorry. Danielle Van De Kamp.
Oh, I don't remember. I know it too.
Desperate Housewives.
Shit.
Desperate Housewives. All right, Monty.
Yeah.
Raft College.
Hint.
Like a boat. Raft. Daria Morgendorfer.
Ah. Well, it's Daria.
That's correct.
She didn't go to that college while she was on the show, though. That was a later TV movie.
Whoa. Well.
How dare you?
You get one Dave point.
That doesn't count to your score today. You have to keep track of your own Dave points.
Yeah, you have to keep track of your own Dave points, guests. I hope you have a private chat room somewhere where you're adding all these together. Because, as you know, Dave doesn't keep track of Dave points. He just gives them out. St. Jude's School for Boys.
I think that's Gossip Girl.
2 points. Hillman College. Hillman College. Two shows for Hillman College.
Different World.
Also would have accepted The Cosby Show. Central Kansas A&M University.
Smallville?
Yep. Ooh. All right. Arlington University, bringing us into our second score break. Arlington University.
Hint.
Claire Bennett.
Oh, Heroes.
Good for 1 point. All right, let's hear them scores.
Shouldn't I get another one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because the score breaks for it. Well, let's just do it.
Okay.
It's not the end, so.
Monty has 12 and
well,
I have 13.
Well, I set up the score breaks for three people.
I understand. 12 to 13.
12 to 13?
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Okay. This is number 34.
Yep.
We'll go to
The double spread eagle.
46.
Yes.
Boston Bay College.
Hint.
Jen Lindy went here.
Oh, that's Dawson's Creek also.
Morningwood Academy, Monty.
Ah, so familiar, can't pull it.
Morningwood
Hint,
Academy. Chris Griffin went here.
Family Guy.
1 point. University of Los Angeles.
Hint.
Carlton Banks went here.
The Fresh Prince of Bel Air.
All right, good for 1 point. Cypress Roads University.
Hint.
Casey Cartwright went here. Casey Cartwright.
Dynasty.
Tara?
Greek.
Greek. Correct. All right. Tara?
Mm-hmm.
Mystic Falls High School.
I think this is the Vampire Diaries?
Correct. Monty?
Yeah.
UC Sunnydale.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Correct. Tara?
Mm-hmm.
East Indiana State University.
Oh, the middle.
Correct. Monty.
Mm-hmm.
Everwood Community College.
Everwood?
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
Constant Billard School for Girls.
Gossip Girl.
Correct. All right.
Dramatic.
Lost my place. Yeah, okay. Arlen University.
King of the Hill.
2 points. All right, Tara, here's... Nope, this is not your last question.
Okay.
Lost my place. Okay. Buckner Hall High School.
Switched at birth.
2 points. Ooh. All right. And so this is your last. Nope.
Well, it could be.
Yeah, no, this is your... Yeah, this is your last one. And then one more after this. Guys, it's confusing when you said I've been three people. Springfield Heights Institute of Technology.
The Simpsons.
All right. Tara.
Yep.
Milford School.
Arrested Development.
All right, let's hear them scores.
Monty has 21.
Yep.
I have 25.
Oh, so close. That was a great game, and guess what? It's not over.
What?
What?
Yeah, that's right. It's time for a little bit of Hot Potato.
Okay.
We want to know all the shows that reference Hudson University.
Law and Order.
We'll start with Monty.
Oh. Shit. So do we just 1 point for each of these?
I'll let you know at the end.
Okay.
Law and Order.
Well, am I supposed to be keeping track or not?
Well, it's until somebody loses.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Hudson.
Law and Order.
Yep.
Tatara. Hudson University.
Felicity?
Nope. Felicity's not in it. Oh, my goodness. Alrighty, so guess what?
What?
How many points was he trailing by? 5, right?
4.
He was, 4.
Yeah, that was worth 5 points.
What?
Actually, it was worth 5 points. I'm not lying. Do you want to hear the other ones?
Yes.
Blue Bloods, uh-huh. Castle, sure. Conviction, which right. is a Law and Order product.
Of course.
The Cosby Show.
Yes.
Degrassi.
Wow.
Which is weird because...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Law and Order, CI, SVU, yep. Trial by Jury,
yep.
Secret Life of the American Teenager,
oh,
Touch, True Calling, Unforgettable, and Without a Trace.
Damn!
Valued Guest.
Congratulations,
well done.
Monty, putting a point up on the Valued Guest board.
Nicely done.
Thank you so much, Ellen Curry, for that, and including the nice little twist of a hot potato.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We lasered off each other's faces in order to talk about the new season of Sci-Fi's Face Off, including special international correspondent Olivia Kwan. Thanks, Olivia. We went around the dial with stops at Ancient Aliens, In Search of Aliens, some Comic-Con, and Married at First Sight. We discovered why we were all domer for having watched Under the Dome this week, and Dave told us all about his Batman Day tale of Boo Vigilante Justice. Monty cooked up a tasty argument for South Park's Scott Tenorman Must Die for the canon. We crowned winners and the losers of the week, and Monty, playing for the guests, was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
And on behalf of Sarah D. Bunting, who is very apologetic.
And Monty Ashley.
That's two after the whistle wins for me in this episode.
We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
No, wait, wait. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yes. Yes. Oh, let me taste your tears, Scott. Your tears are so yummy and sweet.
Dude, I think it might be best for us to never piss Cartman off again. Good call.
Oh, the tears of unfathomable sadness. Yummy, yummy.